You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me is Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and also David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. It's not the 5 o'clock shadow because of me. We missed out on that this week, but we're going to have a look at, well, obviously the tech sector, but also some geopolitics as well. And Viv, one of the things that I've been speaking to David about in the couple of times that I've spoken to him since we, as a threesome, last spoke, is his review of, or not review of, look forward to 2026. And one of the things he says, and he'll back me up on this, is that AI will still be there, will still be very prominent and an increasing part of our lives, but the stocks may not be quite as ebullient as 2025. Would you agree with that?
That is possible, but I would, remember I told you a while back that there's only two ways that AI can really make GDP growth. The GDP growth needs to be around 5% to justify the spending that we are getting at the moment, right? And since we last spoke, what's happened is there is actually developments on that front. So we are seeing for the first time AI getting smart enough to do actual new science. So there's things called these Erdos problems, and they're mathematical problems, and AI is solving them on its own, or at least one of them on their own. This is the kind of stuff that you expect to see before things really start taking off. Because if we can do science like mathematics and so on, it can do science like AI research. And that is the point at which things become, parabolic. And so, yes, it might slow down, but if we do hit these technical limits, whenever they occur, maybe this year, maybe in a decade's time, whatever it happens, at that point in time, things are going to go crazy in a very, visible way. Let me say that. I think one of the reasons that people have kind of got a little bit less impressed by AI recently is because it got too smart. People don't understand how good it is. You need to be one of the world's best scientists to actually use the AI you can get from Gemini or from, OpenAI at the moment to its fullest ability. Most people are literally not smart enough to actually use these programs to what they can do at the moment.
Speaking of not smart enough, and that's me, not you, David, but does that convince you to almost mentally rewrite your 2026 scenario?
No, I called it the year of AI adoption. And what Viv's saying, I can't talk at that high level. But what I do know is that a lot of companies have held back from introducing it into their operations. And my view is, no, you can't. You're just not smart enough. You just don't understand it. And therefore, if I take it at a low level to Accenture, to ServiceNow, to company Salesforce, businesses like that, Adobe and that, which have been ignored and where people are saying, no, you don't need those companies. It's, you can do it yourself. Forget it. Forget it. And I think you're going to need a lot of high-level people to actually get the best out of it for you. So coming from a different angle, from a much lower level, I still think that, their businesses who understand it are going to be needed in order to get the best out of it.
Okay, let me look at it from a different angle. And I just want to go to Viv on this one before I come back to you on a couple of specific stocks examples, David. But Viv, what particular sectors do you think lend themselves to the sort of AI development that you're seeing at the moment? I mean, is it the healthcare sector? Is it aviation? Is it retail? What do you think is the one that could really bolt itself onto AI?
Look, I think the healthcare sector is one of those things that basically it's not been held by the tech. It's been held by either, I would say, inertia in the sector, regulations or other factors. Because at the moment, you can go and use your Gemini, it'll give you a better result than most doctors you talk to. At the moment, the average doctor is not as good as Gemini or ChatGPT. That's just a fact, right?
I can attest to that, by the way, but that's another story.
Yeah. And everyone, I had a health issue, you had a health issue. In the last little while, and in both those cases, right, and this mine was like a year ago, but it's gotten better since then. These things are as good as your doctor, at least, and they have better than a doctor because you can talk to it at like 10 o'clock at night if you wanted to, just to go through like thoughts that you might have about test results or whatever. That's already here. Okay, so healthcare is solved. When it comes to aviation, if you can basically navigate a busy city streets with pedestrians and whatnot, you can fly a plane. There's nothing out of the air up there, you know what I mean? There's all these things that are already at a point where the technology is come to a point where it can be adopted. It's inertia in terms of the industry as well as regulations that hold things back. But speaking of what I was talking about, I don't know if this year the market will go up or not on AI. It could. I'm just saying that we are approaching a point where if the spark takes off, whenever it does take off, you won't see like, you know, a 5 or 6 year, like, you know, time period for it to like really go off. It'll happen in a year because AI is the only technology in the world that adopts itself. So if you have AI that's smart enough, you don't need somebody to adopt it for you. You don't need to have a smart guy coming and telling you what to do in order to get it into your company. The AI could do it for itself. It's almost like self-extracting, if you know what I mean. And so when that does occur, and like I said, I don't know if it's this year or in 10 years time, but we are kind of seeing the slight sparks right now that this thing is getting smart enough to do these kind of things at some potential time in the future.
David, this utopian world that has just been described by Viv Govender, you're an artistic person. You're a great artist and a very, very accomplished writer, I must say. Is it all over for people like you?
Is it over for me? Not at all. Mm. Not at all. I think that from that point of view, it's helping me enormously, absolutely enormously, you know, to craft something easier. And, you know, when I'm looking for I will write a paragraph or two paragraphs or something, and I'll say, this just doesn't gel. And I go into AI and it corrects it for me and, you know, just makes it like having an editor. Yes. And the editor's there. I mean, nobody writes a book. Everybody in their book, they always thank the editors. Simply, we can't write like that. We haven't got the same kind of skills.
Yes.
But I think where it also helps me is sometimes in humor. You know, it's like, here's 10 jokes or 10 statements. I say, oh, this is good. You know, but I do adapt it. You've got to adapt it. You know, but I mean, it's like having a good friend. So if anything, it's helped me enormously.
It hasn't changed your style, has it? I don't want to harp on this point. No,
not at all. In fact, it's enhanced, you know, enhanced it to a large extent. The art side is difficult. You know, I don't like AI generated stuff. Not at all. You know, I don't think they can come close to, you know, proper art as somebody who sits there with a easel or so. You know, it becomes very flat, and especially the kind of stuff I do. Which is painstakingly, elaborate, you know, kind of, I mean, etching, I mean, stroke by stroke. So it can't really help me unless I want to construct, say, listen, give me a picture of this that I can copy it or blend it in or use it as a reference. Yeah. But from a writing point of view, unbelievable.
Really? I'm still not convinced, but yes, I can understand if you're disciplined and are not lazy, and I know you're not. You enjoy your writing, so you're not going to say, right, write this for me because I want to watch a football match or something and I need to get it out for tomorrow. You're not going to do that, I know. Viv, a stock that came up earlier this week, in fact, it was yesterday, that David's been banging on about correctly for so long now and successfully for so long now, is ASML. And there's another one as well, which is TSMC. If you look at those two companies, they epitomize AI investing, don't they?
Yes, I own both of them. And for the longest time, ASML was, I was complaining. I did not understand why this company was not more valuable. It just made no sense to me. It is literally the irreplaceable company in the world. There is nothing on the planet that comes close to what ASML can do. And it's foundational to this whole kind of technological craze we are seeing right now. And yet it's the cheapest company. It's the same price. In fact, it might be cheaper right now than OpenAI is. And OpenAI has all these competitors. ASML, on the other hand, has no competitors. The Chinese economy cannot do what ASML does. And so for the first time that we are seeing it rally as it is breaking the $500 billion mark, it was quite pleasant because I've owned it for 2 years and you can see it hasn't really done that much until very recently. TSMC, I also have, look again, they don't have as much as a moat, as ASML, but they do have, the execution ability that makes them almost unique in the world. It's a combination of the Taiwanese, culture that makes people willing to go with it, like whatever time to get things done. Also the fact that they're kind of isolated, so you could have these super genius, you know, engineers being paid good, but not incredible salaries like they'd get to the US for other jobs, etc. And so you have like this combination that this kind of like special, like, you know, perfect storm that allows you to, like, you know, produce the world's you know, best chips using machines from ASML. So both these companies are owned by me. And like I said, until very recently, ASML has been quite disappointing. But really, I think for the first time, the people are really starting to see the true value coming in here. And just one thing I want to point out about these things. When people talk about, like, you know, these 2-nanometer chips that these guys are making, do you know what 2 nanometers means?
No, not a clue.
2 nanometers is about 2 nanometers is about 10 atoms. Think about it. When they say 2-nanometer chips, we're talking about 10 atoms wide. That's what we're talking about. Okay, so we're talking X-rays being basically used to etch these things, not like normal light lasers, X-ray lasers, effectively, in your mind. That's the kind of technology we're talking about. And ASML is the only one in the world that can do this. It's an incredible company.
Surely, though, given what you've been talking about over the last 7.5 minutes, someone's going to replicate this, though, Viv, and then I'll come to you, David. I mean, someone, of course, because of the nature of AI, someone will come up with something and there will be a new company, a new startup that will replicate the business that ASML is in. Viv?
Okay, let me explain to you what the technology looks like. So first of all, what ASML does is the most complicated high-end science, or engineering rather, that humans have ever done. There is no company in the world that comes close to what ASML does in terms of that kind of thing, right? When you're basically using X-rays, you can't use lenses to focus these things. What you're using is levels of little sheets of metal that reflect the X-rays in light interference patterns that actually etch onto the chip. Forget about that. But here's the thing. The Chinese have been trying to do this. They know it's the company that they have to replace. China has been trying for like over a decade to get ASML to do what ASML is doing. This is the world's largest manufacturing entity. This is China as a whole. And they've been trying. They have not done it yet. It's not because they have some patents that the Chinese are respecting beyond anything else. It's not because they have, you know, some legal protection. It's just because the actual technical skill required to do this is their moat. And you can't go and just replicate this technical skill out of nowhere. It is an incredibly, an incredible achievement for you Dutch. I can say that to Lindsay, that you have created a company that is just so good that even the world's largest manufacturing country, China, cannot do what you do.
Okay, David, now the human factor comes in. Someone's landing at this moment at Schiphol Airport, Amsterdam, and they're going to get on the train to Eindhoven, and they're going to knock on the door and say, Mr. ASML, let's go and have a cup of coffee, and they're going to nick a couple of those ASML people. Surely, after what Viv just described, somebody might be tempted. Why not?
I'm sure they've been trying to do this, but I mean, I don't think it's one particular scientist. This has been developed over a long time. And in fact, if you go into the history of ASML, which I think came out of Philips, its early stages, its early life was very dramatic. It didn't make profits. It was battling along. So to get to where they've got today took a huge amount of effort and pain and suffering. So it's a wonderful story. And I think it could have only been Netherlands or the Hollanders, you know, that could have done something like that. Doer, but persistent. And you understand what I'm saying.
Yes,
Americans
do.
Are too kind of, you know, all over the place, capricious, phlegmatic, whatever you want to say. So it hasn't come overnight. It's been a long battle, but I agree with Viv, and you know that I've been saying this. I found the same thing, and I used to drive me mad every time they published results, because they're not known for their exuberance. You know, their CEOs don't get up and put on leather jackets and put on a show like a Jensen Huang or someone like that, or the Apple boys. You know, so they just get on with it. And they would give you a very matter of fact where they are and what they're doing. But they would quietly say, we're going to grow 30% per year and we've got good demand. They would say it in a low tone and no one believed them, you know. And I agree with Viv, and I'm so pleased that they've just taken off like they have. And look, you've got TSMC, it's the same kind of situation as well, you know, which makes up the whole chain. From there on, you get NVIDIA, and I think a lot of people are underrating NVIDIA as well. You know, that's where I heard for the first time the 2-nano. No, it was at ASML's presentation when they spoke about reducing chips from like, what's it, from 10 nanos to 2 nanos or something like that. I said, you know, they're not going to stop. You know, you don't. Everybody thinks technology just comes to a standstill. These businesses are developing all the time, as you heard from Viv in the, you know, in the early stages of this conversation. Just what lies ahead. So you want to go down to value, you know, you want to buy some bank, or you want to buy some chap who makes nappies or makes cream for your face or something like that. Yeah, well, go ahead, you know, good luck. This is at a different level.
Okay, so no one can stop. Go on.
There's one more thing as well. One more sort of company. You talked about ASML, you talked about NVIDIA, you talked about AMD and those kind of guys, right? And TSMC. The best performer in my AI portfolio in the last year has been what? Micron. They make the memory. And yes, SK Hynix, yes. Right? Mm. We're talking like tripling in the last year. Okay. No. And these are the companies that make the high, because the chips do one thing, but the memory is important, because if you want to have these AI things do things, you want them to remember stuff and have this huge, what they call context windows. So like what you do is you have all your, the new information you have, you've got to apply that information across the model. And to do that, you need huge amounts of memory. And these memory companies have gone ballistic. I mean, in the last, basically month or so, Samsung is up 40%. People don't forget that Samsung is also one of these guys as well. Micron, SK Hynix, and Samsung are the guys that make the memory that you're looking at. And they have gone, like I said, ballistic in the last. Like, I mean, Micron also up almost 40%. And of course, all these memory companies have gone crazy, because you're going to have to need this memory. For these things to actually be useful, they have to be applied in the world, and the memory guys come into play. So, yeah, that's another, just one little extra thing to note, that it's these guys have actually been the best performer in the sector.
Okay, so AI is not going to be stopped by anyone, least of all President Donald J. Trump, the 47th president of the United States of America. And David, he's becoming more and more bizarre. He's becoming more and more radical. He's becoming more and more rabidly racist, more authoritarian. He even said in a Reuters interview in the last 36 hours that he doesn't see why there should be any midterms, because every midterm, the president, the sitting president, actually loses. I mean, he's actually said this to Reuters, a respected news agency with a fairly decent audience. David, he's gone completely bonkers.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a word. I know that you've got Trump derangement syndrome. I've got fatigue syndrome. I don't know how to put it into something like that. But I'm getting very worried.
Yes.
You know, I'm getting worried about where the United States is going and where it's heading. And also, why no one is standing up? Why haven't there been much louder voices to his attack on Powell? You know, calling him everything from a moron to whatever. No wonder this lady Pira has a go at him, because she says she thinks that she's furthering his aims and that she'll curry favor with her boss. You know, apart from that, the Greenland, Venezuela, all these issues, you know, why aren't people, you know, standing up to this? One day he's going to bomb Iran. He's not going to bomb Iran. You know, it's just almost impossible to read him. But I know the markets are just disregarding and saying this is all noise. But from a personal point of view, from a person who's has children in America, who's got going to please God have great grandchildren there. I don't know where this country is going and why people are not standing up to this mad syndrome that is developing.
I agree with you. I also find it depressing. I was asked by a California organization, a small organization that wants to rebuild America. And they said, could you write something, not about Trump, but about how to counteract his mania. And they come up with some good examples of how you can start from the bottom up rather than the top down. In other words, how to have a go at Trump. Forget about that. Just how to build from the bottom and, as I say, counteract him. And I sat down and I just thought, it's futile, because there's nothing that can stop him, for the very reasons that you've just said. People are too scared of him, and nobody stands in the way. I mean, okay, 11 central bankers have signed some letter to say, we stand with J. Powell, but he doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about Greenland. He didn't even know the name of the president of Greenland or prime minister of Greenland, whatever it is.
Well, there are only five people, these, you know.
Well,
only
57,000 live there. Technically. But, but yeah, Viv, you've been this is why AI is probably Trump-proof and recession-proof, because AI doesn't care about what David and I have just been talking about. Do you care?
Yeah, look at I want to bring something in here, and I think that, you know, it sounds crazy right now, but I mentioned a while back to you guys as well. I don't know if it's Trump. You know what I mean?
How?
What I'm saying is, he's declining. So he's declining right now. You can see that quite clearly.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, the stuff he's forgetting. And people think Trump is dumb. Go and watch an interview for Donald Trump from the 1990s, 1980s. Donald Trump was not a dumb guy, right? It just that, you know, as people get to the age that he's getting to, obviously he's you can see the signs of lack of capacity growing, if you know what I mean.
David's the same age, and he's not showing any signs, are you, David?
No, David, you're not 80, are you?
Nearly. 2 years.
Nearly.
No, I understand. I understand exactly what Viv is saying. Yeah, I know what he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and carry on.
You have guys like Stephen Miller who actually
The one.
You know, I mean, Stephen Miller, this guy, I mean, you go back in history, he's like a cartoon villain. He used to throw stuff on the floor at school, and they asked him, why are you doing this? It's for the janitors to pick up. This their job.
Yeah.
You know, he basically would not be friends with any Mexican or people who are darker skinned in high school, and saying that, you know, you were like subhuman or something. This isn't high school. You know what I mean? This guy's been an avowed racist for forever, from the time he was a kid. J.D. Vance, who I did say, like, you know, when Trump was elected, is probably going to be president before the end of the term, because of, you know, there's a 1 in 3 chance at least of that happening. I think it's probably like 50-50 at the moment, that by the end of the term, J.D. Vance is president. Basically, he's, I don't think, as innately, you know, misaligned, let me say, as Stephen Miller, but he seems to be crave a coward when it comes to power. I mean, to see this, I mean, he's married to an Indian woman, right? And to see the stuff that comes out of the Republican Party around that kind of stuff, and he's not stepping up. I mean, it's people have mentioned the fact that he doesn't step up to people that say really bad things about his wife. You know what I mean? And his kids. I mean that is pretty, like, you know, I would say craven. But he's probably going to be, like I said, the next person in there. I don't, this is the one thing I can say, I don't think he'll be the next president elected. That being said, because even if you look back at history of the US, right, go back to like all the way to, like, you know, the last 40 something years, you're not going to find anyone besides Reagan that had a VP be their successor. Obama was super popular. His VP couldn't make it. Clinton was even more popular. His VP couldn't make it, right? So Trump, with his unpopularity, I don't think J.D. Vance becomes the next elected president of the United States, but I do think he becomes the next president, or at least a 50% chance of it happening because of health issues and so on. But the thing is that this is what really worries me, and this is speculation, of course, but should we have the AI takeoff? And the AI takeoff is what they called, I mean, this is the term they use, it's called FOOM, F-O-O-M. It happens when your AI becomes smart enough to start doing research on AI itself. At that point in time, you find huge exponential increases in power and so on coming through. If that happens during Trump's term, you will start to see jump ups in GDP that are going to be spectacular. You're going to start to see increases in, like, you know, technology that are going to be quite remarkable. That could actually be the thing that gets you the J.D. Vance elected presidency, because who's going to not elect the guy that was vice president when your GDP grew 10% in the last 2 years? You know what I mean?
Are we already seeing it, Viv, with that print that we saw from the US GDP, or was that just not a fudged number, but a skewed number, 4.3% when the market was expecting 3.5%, something like that? Was any of that down to AI input?
I think it's starting to happen, but I think that's also a larger impact was probably the shutdown.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that was like kind of skewed number happening. But I do think that, you know, I'm seeing people out there predicting between 4 and 6% GDP growth in the US this year. Okay. That is an insane number. I mean, the European Union can't do 1.5%. We in South Africa can't do 1.5%. And how is the world's largest, most developed economy doing 3 times what we are doing? You know what I mean? And this is China numbers. This is India numbers. This is the stuff you do not see in a large developed economy. And if you do have that happen, if you do suddenly have Americans basically living in an economy where they are making, you know, or the GDP is going up like 10% a year, the one thing that might come against that, which might be even worse than a Trump administration, as shocking as it might be, is that what you do is you actually stimulate the envy response.
Yeah.
Which is what you get in California at the moment with that wealth tax, which is the most incredibly, I mean, if I had to describe this, well, I don't know if you've seen it, Lindsay, have you seen this wealth tax in California?
No, but tell me about it.
Okay, this is it. It's a wealth tax, right? But it's a tax of 1% of your net wealth, right? Every year for 5 years. So it's 5% of your wealth. Except, how do they measure your wealth? It's not by what you own. It's by the control you have of a company. So the guys at Google, for instance, control more than half the company because they have what they call super voting shares, right? And so you don't count how much they actually own in dollar terms. They count 50% of Google, which would be equivalent to something over the five-year period, like half their wealth would be taxed. But here's the thing. They have to pay the tax in cash. So first they've got to sell those shares, pay capital gains, and take that value and pay off the tax in California. What's going to happen? Obviously, the guys from Google have left California now, right? Then you have guys that own, like, you know, things like, for instance, OpenAI or whatever, which are untraded shares. They still have to sell those shares somehow, get liquid, and pay off this tax. So the California is destroying its Silicon Valley. It may not exist in the next, say, year or so in California because of this three-year tax. And why is this occurring? It's occurring because people are starting to see inequality rise. And the same thing is Mamdani in New York. He's the same situation. And you're starting to see this happening in there's a guy called Gary Stevens in the UK, talk about the wealth tax. The French just passed the lower house was passed. I don't know the French political system as well, but the French leftists tried to pass a law basically making a wealth tax of a minimum of 2% of your wealth per year. And if you try to leave, they wanted to make it 5 or 10 years. Basically, so if you left France now, you still have to pay for 10 years after you leave. Okay, this is happening around the world. Even though wealth taxes are known to be terrible everywhere in Italy, it's been bad. But why are they doing this? It's because this inequality might be rising to an extent that is going to cause that. So the thing is that we are approaching these points of huge growth, huge GDP growth, but it's probably going to result either in a Trump or J.D. Vance presidency, because of course it's going to be said, oh, the world is wonderful, a utopia, like you said, and you know, vote for the guy that got it to us, or it's going to result in a backlash, which is going to bring socialism into play, which unfortunately, you know, anywhere in the world, as bad as the right wing is, the socialists are as bad, in some cases worse than them. And I think that's the situation going forward in places like the US at the moment.
Well, you two chaps, stop making plans now if what Viv has just sketched out does come to fruition. Now then, David, I know you don't particularly like commodities. You look at them with an indulgent eye. But silver must interest you, because I remember after Liberation Day, the silver price was below $30 per ounce. It dipped down below there because every market dipped down below every single level that it had just very briefly. Then I remember sending a tweet out, an X out, mid-October, I think it was, to say, is it time to ring the bell on silver? Because it was $51 per ounce.
Yeah, you did say that.
And then it's now above $90 per ounce. So it's nearly doubled, and then it's nearly doubled again. Now tell me something. I remember the days of Bunker Hunt, when Bunker Hunt tried to corner the silver market. Has silver got a use now, David? And Viv, come in on this one as well. Has silver suddenly become a PGM, if you like?
I think its only real use is on solar panels, where it's used quite extensively. But one of the driving forces was silver has always been, I call it poor man's gold, but it's always been an alternative to gold for those who can afford it. It's the only country that really accumulates a metal as a safe haven. It's been very, you know, it's very closely associated to America. But you know, Trump wanted to put all kinds of taxes on imported minerals and metals and copper and so on. And I think the fact that there was a fear that that he would do it, and for that reason, I think there's been a huge accumulation before this happens. But its rise from say 50 to 90, I can't explain. You know, the sheer pandemonium behind it, which we can explain for platinum as well. I'm not quite sure who the forces are that have been accumulating, you know, as much, or the frenzy behind that. I can understand prices going up. But, I really don't know who's been paying those kind of levels for this. I would imagine that there's massive speculation around this. And my fear is that we've seen before that when this does slow down, it slows down at an incredible pace. So it's astonishing me. You know, I look more for the other metals to make any kind of decision. But when you start to go into gold and platinum and silver at these kind of levels or at this kind of pace, you know that there's going to be pain somewhere down the line.
Yeah, Viv, the commodity cycle, such as it is, I mean, the oil price, even without the oil price, the Commodity Research Bureau index is at an all-time record high at the moment, or just below an all-time record high. So if oil started to go as well because of a reigniting of the Iran tensions between Iran and the United States of America, oil went to $75-$80 a barrel, the metals kept on going, the dollar kept on eking its way downwards, then you've got a commodity cycle that's continuing to run, which means the rand, of course, Viv, will go to 14.50 from its current level of, what is it, 16.30, 16.40? Who would have thought it, Viv?
Yeah. Look, I mean, with regards to the precious metals, I mean, have you guys talked about the BRICS unit yet?
No.
There's a thing called the BRICS unit being proposed, which would be like a way for, it's called the unit UNIT, and it's a 40% gold backed, 60% currency backed, like kind of, currency, like de facto currency be created between like the BRICS countries and so on, like for cross-border trade. And of course, that requires a lot of gold. And I think one of the reasons that gold is doing so well is because of course what's happening with Powell and the US Fed, etc. But with regards to silver, firstly, a couple of things to mention, and this is maybe again conspiratorial. I'm coming across like the guy with the tinfoil hat all the time. But there's been speculation about silver's market manipulation for a long time. I mean, people with the like a bit of history, because I mean, only David here probably remembers this, was the silver market manipulation in the 1980s, you know what I mean? So there has been that kind of stuff happening in the past. And so there's rumors about silver manipulation at the moment. But when it comes to oil, I mean, you say Iran blowing up. If Iran blows up, you'd be lucky to see $180 oil. Forget about $80 oil. And in that scenario, I'm almost certain we'd have a recession in South Africa. Because what Iran controls what's called the Straits of Hormuz. If you look at the percentage of the Middle Eastern oil that goes through that place, it's huge. And here is the thing that people forget. This oil does not go to America. It goes to where? It goes to China, right? So the U.S. has the ability to blow up Iran and cause oil to spike in a way that would directly harm China. The incentives here are scary.
On the other hand, you could say that if the regime changes, then there's more investment in the oil industry from foreign companies, and therefore the oil starts to flow even more than it is now, and therefore that's bearish. Like some people were saying that medium term, the Venezuela situation is bearish for the oil price, and initially there was a little bit of a spike up from about 61, 62 up to 65 with Brent crude. So I would say that, in fact, the bullish people would say exactly the opposite to you, Viv, but we'll wait and see. At the moment, oil still.
When have we last had a peaceful regime change that immediately resulted in more GDP growth? That has not happened in the Middle East in a very long time, right?
Very true.
You know,
and the other thing is the Shah of Iran's son really does look like like his father, doesn't he? Have you been seeing interviews with him, David? He looks remarkably like him. And he keeps on saying, I'm the best person to lead the country. I can tell you something. If I were him, I wouldn't set foot in Iran.
It's calmed down quite a bit, hey? We don't know any information. Nothing new has come through from that. And this seems to suggest that, they've got this under control. We haven't heard of any more deaths. No more videos have come through or anything. So I don't know where we are, but it's out of the limelight. It's not in the headlines anymore. And which I find is quite sad because, I think most of the world would have wanted, some kind of change there, you know, particularly understanding who's in charge. So I don't know. It seems pretty quiet at the moment, which I think is a bad sign.
Gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you very much for your time on a Friday. You've terrified me brilliantly, by the way. Thank goodness I can sit down and watch some football over the weekend. We will be back at our normal time next Thursday for the 5 o'clock shadow. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and Viv Govender from the award-winning Rand Swiss. We'll see you next week. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.